You like my brownie, Joey?
Oh, it's sexier now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Beyond Retro Podcast. I'm Nathan Kennedy, here with Joe Amato, and on today's episode, we're going to be talking about Nightmare on Elm Street Part 3, The Dream Warriors. Easily my favorite in the series. Joe, I remember you saying that this is your favorite, well, sequel, because obviously the first film is at the top, but I'm saying in terms of sequels.
Sequels, yes. Oh, just to let you know, yes, I felt like that nurse was talking to me, too, in Elm Street 3. I was like, Joey, I always felt like that. I just hate when Freddy was like, oh, Joey. Like, when he was talking to him, freaked me out. But, yeah, well, speaking of the sequels, yes, out of the whole series of Elm Street, yeah, this is my favorite. And it's, you know, like how I'd always debate, is part one my favorite or part three? And I always tell people, pick and choose. Well, I mean, yeah, the first one is my favorite, and part three is my second favorite. The rest just kind of, meh, until we got to New Nightmare, and I was like, yeah, I'd make that my third. New Nightmare was damn good. But, no, this is, yeah, this it's a movie to where, like I said, you forget about part two, because part two is just absolutely forgettable to me. There's some people that might like it.
I mean, there's some symbolism with the coach and the balls going everywhere.
I never thought of that. I just thought, this is just a horrible fucking movie.
People didn't either, but when I watched the documentary where they talk about all the movies, with part two, they're like, yeah, there were a lot of homoerotic overtones in this.
Was that Never Sleep Again, that documentary? Yes. Is that what you're talking about? Or, okay, you know what? Is that available on YouTube? Because I still got to see the whole thing. I have not seen the whole thing.
I don't know if it's available on YouTube. I knew for the longest time that it was either packed in a multi-DVD pack with some other stuff. I remember one time it was just really cheap, like $5 at Walmart once. I was like, damn, I should have waited. But,
Okay, well, I still have to see the whole thing.
No, it's fantastic. But when they break down part two, I was... And at the time, they were like, yeah, when we were filming it, we weren't even... That wasn't even crossing our minds. But then, like, we saw the finished product, and then we all started looking at each other like...
Oh, really?
Huh.
Wow.
Oh,
I guess
yeah,
I never...
That,
I...
Huh?
I just, it was just so just horrible. It was just horrible and forgettable to me. But when this came out, it was like, all right, just got back into it. But it's like we said before, as good as part three is by itself, it started the humor bit, unfortunately, for Freddy, because there was a couple of the funny one-liners in this that then they milked it in four and then 05 and then, oh, dear God, part six. It's like Freddy went from being this frightening nightmare demon to like your buddy, you know, his Uncle Freddy. It's like I just wasn't feeling it. And the makeup, like you said, went from being wet and burning, scary and frightening to kind of rubber-faced and just – you weren't scared of Freddy no more. So part three had its good parts for its humor.
I mean, personally, I was still afraid of him because the time frame these came out, I was still too young. But
oh, well, my mind was warped by then. So I was like, yeah, just nothing was scary for him at all. But part three, this one was just, it was this perfect mix. And you know, the other thing is like when people say, you know, there was never strong female characters in any movies. And back then, it's like, do you ever really look back at horror movies and think, damn, who are the ones that are basically the ass kickers and the protagonists and the ones that are the heroes? It is the females. I mean, they were all in this movie. So it's like for anybody to say there's never been strong females, like, let's go back and watch some of these horror movies and see what they did. I just loved it because it was just, well, I mean, from the start, I'll let you go to, you know, who we start off with and how it goes into it, because it doesn't waste any time of getting to Freddy. It happened damn quick, you know, so I'll let you go and then we can start mixing it up.
Well, yeah, it's when you're talking about strong female characters, we have at least three, I guess you could say two and a half, because, I mean, she's beautiful and bad. But she, you know, she gets a few licks in later on, but, you know, doesn't really last too long. But, we're introduced to Patricia Arquette, which I feel like she's sort of ashamed of this because she didn't participate in said documentary. So everybody else was there and talking about how great it was, and I feel like she wasn't in it. Now I'm starting to question myself. It's almost like when they're having their dreams. And that's also the wonderful thing that I enjoy about the series is you can also play with the dream state and the reality aspect. And that's a good way to always throw the audience off. Because you can be like, oh, well, they're in this right here. And, you know, one character can turn around and boom, they're somewhere else. And you're like, oh, shit, they're in the dream world now. But no, yeah. We're introduced to her character who is listening to some Dokken at the beginning. The Dokken tracks that are used for this film are fantastic. Joe, we talked about genres of music and we've sort of shed a little light on your backstory as a kid. We know that you lived in a location that was a little more urban. So were you a little more drawn to any of the hair metal rock stuff, or were you leaning towards early days of hip hop?
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, there was probably more of an influence there.
Well, yeah,
but, you know, in an urban area.
Yeah, I was never really into the rock or hardcore heavy metal or stuff. I mean, there were certain songs I can remember I'd hear, though. Hey, I thought it was cool, like Def Leppard, that Pour Some Sugar on Me. That was funky. You know, we got into that, you know, but...
New Kids on the Block. That's what it was. I got you.
No. Could you imagine? You look over at this wall. Joe, why don't you ever show that wall? And I got all these New Kids on the Block and all this other whatever bands they were back then all hanging on that wall. But no, I mean, I guess I never flipped over the music track. I mean, I was just too much obsessed in the movie itself. I mean, I guess for any movie, even if there was something that was hip-hop or anything that was funky, I guess sometimes I never thought about it. I just got sucked into the movie too much of, like, these characters and what was going on. But you're right. I know she had that music. She's blasting, trying to keep herself awake. I even like how it started. It's kind of just, who would have thought papier-mâché is looking gross? You don't even know what's going on. Just looking nasty. Like, what the hell is she doing? Then you see that she made the Elm Street house. But, yeah she's... And of course, she has a conversation with her mother, you know, and her boyfriend that's yelling, "Where's the bourbon?"
Man. Yeah,
was perfect later on. Oh, yes,
no, I was gonna say that line later on where that scene is sort of recreated is hilarious, but it's just she's staying awake, she's having problems, and her mom comes
eating coffee and drinking pop, trying to keep
and she's excited that her mom's home. You know, it's like, oh hey, my mother, my comfort. And then you just hear like the dude downstairs and
Elaine, where's the bourbon, where you keep the bourbon, or something.
And it leads into a good thing where it's the dream state, and it turns out like her mom pops back up there and she's like slit her wrist, and that's how the movie starts. And you're just like, all right, well shit, here we go. So finds herself basically,
well, how that happens? Well, like you've seen it, when she goes, she's, you know, she's walking into the bathroom and she's, of course, dreaming. And then when she turns the faucet, it grabs her hand, and then the other one, it pulls her wrist. And then you see Freddy in the mirror and he turns that other handle into those blades and then slashes her wrist. But then, when she sees her mother comes in, breaks in and screams, then you see she has a razor blade. Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was so she ends up basically in a mental institution with some other teenagers that come to find out they're having similar issues and dreams. And we get a very young and slim Lawrence Fishburne.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, the roles that
he... Did he go by Lawrence? Real quick, did he go by Lawrence or Larry in that
Larry.
One? Because I know, I think...
He went by Larry.
Just like in Pee-wee's... didn't he in Pee-wee's Playhouse go by Larry Fishburne?
Which is also weird to think about his body of work in the last 20 years, from Matrix to, like, John Wick. And
starting off with Pee-wee's Playhouse and Elm Street and all this stuff, it's different.
Yeah, it's like night and day for him. He sounds different and he looks different, obviously. But I think one of the coolest things about this film is the callback and bringing Nancy back into the fold. And
I like that.
Yeah, as it turns out, you know, she took all this experience and wanted to work towards something to where she could, like, help. So she's
with dreams and stuff, and then like the hypnosil, that experimental stuff that stops dreams, and go ahead.
Yeah, well, I was just gonna say, so we have her and we have the other doctor who is sort of like the conventional method guy, and she comes in, he's starting to question, like, well, here's this new experimental drug, she wants to try new things, and they sort of butt heads a little bit, but obviously he's like, oh man, she's pretty. But I also like, too, how they also kept the little streak in her hair.
That she got from the
first movie. So we're introduced to all of these other kids. And who was your favorite out of the group?
And see, I had a toss between two. And again, it shows when you're growing up, you know, don't get me wrong, I guess there's some people that say, I want a character that looks like me and I can relate to. When I was growing up, I just enjoyed everybody was in a movie or a cartoon. Like when we say with Masters of the Universe, 80% of the characters are creatures and things that aren't even real. It's like, I never thought, hey, I wish I could look like the Beast Man or a Merman. But in this, it's like, yeah, I love Kincaid and I love the Wizard Master. You'd think I would like Joey because that's my name. But, I mean, you know, he couldn't speak in this. Yes, his power at the end, he can finally scream. But I like Kincaid because he was a strong character. I like seeing, oh man, Freddy's gonna get his ass kicked, and just like even later, like I said, we're gonna be jumping. We're jumping all over this movie.
Well, I'm sure you like Kincaid anyway because he just talked a lot of shit.
He did, but he was strong, and I thought, oh man, he's gonna kick the shit out of Freddy. That's all you think in your head is you want somebody to kick ass. Because here's the thing about this: you finally see in this movie that they can use, you know, like whatever they do in their dreams, they can use that against Freddy. Like, what do you like doing? You see, was it Kirsten or how did you say her name? Kristen? What was her? The main girl, was that her name, Kristen? I want to make sure I'm saying her. Okay, yeah, you know, she does her kind of flipping and all that other shit and doing some kung fu, which was cool, but the one kid who couldn't walk, and he's in the wheelchair. In his dreams, of course, he's the Wizard Master. He liked playing, like, D&D type games, which, you know, a lot of the nerdy kids, you know, we like that shit, or role-playing games. So I thought it was cool how, you know, he could walk, but that scene, as much as you like Freddy, you wanted the character to get his ass kicked. And when Freddy was sitting there, you know, like saying, you know, it's the chair for you, kid, you know, he had that, you know, chair coming down. You remember, he's, I am the Wizard Master. I'm the Wizard Master. He slammed the ground. He came up and then he just blasted that energy and shattered that chair. And when Freddy had that look like, oh shit, man, I remember the crowd. We were screaming our asses off. And then we say him in the name of Lorik, Prince of Elves, Demon Be Gone. He shot that energy. We were like, oh, fuck yeah, because we thought he's going to kill Freddy. And then he started running up on him. I was like, God damn it, no. And then he grabbed him. I don't believe in fairy tales, kid, and killed. We were so pissed, but it was the first time we were thinking, somebody's going to match you, Freddy. You think you're a master in these dreams. This guy's, he's a wizard. And I really thought he was going to kill Freddy. And when he got killed, I was so fucking pissed. So I guess he might have been my favorite and Kincaid my second favorite. But, oh, go ahead. You got me all emotional because goddamn, that was so cool. I remember that moment. We lost our shit in the theaters.
I would honestly have to say Kincaid is my favorite just because he was always getting in trouble. And I think...
Like for, you?
Well, to be fair, as a kid, I never really got in trouble that much.
You were just a troublemaker. You kind of, you know, like instigated shit. I know you were.
The older I got, I would stir the pot, but I always avoided trouble. So I think I always related to stronger characters that stood up for themselves and caused a ruckus if they ever had to. And Kincaid is... And it... Look, there's probably deeper issues there that... the movie doesn't really dig into much, but Kincaid's my favorite. And
yeah, and Freddy kind of played, if you notice, he played on almost everybody's you know, like issue or emotion, like, you know, with Joey not being able to talk, and of course, but Joey had the hots for that nurse, and that nurse was hot too, good god. But
she was okay.
Yeah, she was great for me. But anyways, so yeah, when she, you know, was sitting there in a kiss and pull out his tongue, because remember, he can't speak anyways, and to use tongues to wrap and bind him up. And then
I got Kincaid, tongue-tied, Joey.
Yeah, that's right. And then now Kincaid's super strong, but then, you know, when he's ready to get towards Freddy towards the end, and you see when Freddy just grabs him and picks him up, it's like, okay, Sean, you're strong, but I'm stronger. And then when Taryn, when she sat there, she, you know, like, you know, I'm beautiful and bad and had those knives, like, she wasn't scared. And when she was in the alley, she's fighting Freddy. And I loved it when she stabbed him and then he used his normal voice, no, like, voiceover stuff, and he's trying to, you know, like, kind of get her mercy. But then again, he shows his fingers as being needles because she was a drug addict, and then injects. So everything, and even the one girl, you know, welcome to prime time, bitch. You know, bam, pulling her. You always want to be in TV. He played off of anything, I guess, what was their kind of strengths or thought there were strengths or weaknesses, it seemed like, in the movie, which worked great for every one of them.
Jennifer is the one that the TV hopeful. She wants to be on TV one day. This is going to sound...
Forgettable character?
Yeah, but she also... Yeah. Kind of unforgettable because she had her face shape was weird. I know that sounds kind of mean, but it's like... it just seemed like everything was just smushed into the center of her face. She looked like... I can't remember the character from Dick Tracy, but she looked like that.
Wait a second. Mumps, not mumps. What was the I know what you're saying. There's
and this is the face, part. This is the part where
we need Tyler.
Like, we would have to have Tyler here to
yeah, because I don't remember all of Dick Tracy. But no, she, like you said, she's kind of, for me, was the forgettable character, but she was also part of one of the most memorable lines when he was like, "This is your big break, you know, on TV. Welcome to prime time, bitch," and then pulls her in. And of course, like, so that's became the whole humor of Freddy. So she was part of that moment, but as for her character, that was the one character I didn't flip over. Everybody else, though, I was into. You know, I wanted every one of these characters to live and survive. And well, as you see, most of them did make it to, you know, the next one. And of course, in that one, then a lot of them got off.
They killed them all off again. But I think, that's a memorable kill, and I also really enjoy the kill with Philip the Sleepwalker.
Yeah, that was freaky.
Where he's got his marionettes that are there on his bed, and then, you know, as he's laying there, it's like all of his ligaments come out, which is a great...
It was gross.
It walks him out to the edge, and then, you know, everyone else is just seeing him jump off.
Yep.
But that's also a really cool visual as well when he's there at the end, and then you see Freddy, like, superimposed in the sky.
Like, he's the marionette, and that's his puppet.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic. And that's another thing that we always hammer this home every time we talk about any of these movies. Practical effects.
Yeah.
CG cannot best any of that stuff. Like, when... he's gonna stab her in the arms, and you see little suckers like on her arms.
That looked gross to me. Those little mouths. I mean, at first, I remember when I first seen it, I was like, "Are these eyeballs and mouths? What the hell are those?" It was creepy. And then, hell, at the end, remember when Nancy was saying he's stronger? I've never seen him this strong. He's like, "Yes, the souls of the children." And he rips his shirt back. He's seen the faces. That had me almost want to vomit as a kid. That was freaky too. I'm, you know, just picture nowadays, it'd be all CG, phony, and just like, I'm not saying CG don't work for some stuff. Of course it does, but sometimes it just, practical effects just it seems more believable because it you're seeing it for real. It looks like it's happening.
Yeah, and after you had the death of Philip, and through the TV, like, they were just like, all right, enough is enough. Like, you guys can't be here anymore. So they kick Nancy and the other doctor, I can't remember his name, Neil Gordon. I got some of the stuff up here so I can kind of, like, pinpoint so we don't sound like total idiots on here. So they kick them out, and
nun, you got to get to the nun, that creepy nun. You know what?
I was going to jump ahead, but you're like, during some of the funerals, Dr. Gordon starts to see a nun walking around and starts actually having conversations with this nun that starts to gradually shed a little more light on what exactly is happening. Because at this point, too, he's still not a firm believer of everything that's going on.
Right.
And I that's also like the beauty of it, because when he's talking to this nun, he turns around. When someone else is like when Nancy comes up and he turns around and then turns around and looks back, nun's not there. And that's also a good way, because you've already been played to with the whole thing of like, well, are they dreaming? Are they in real estate? What the fuck's going on? So that's a nice little twist. But we find that out at the very, very end. But there is the intriguing story that there was she said a patient, correct? There was a patient that was locked away here, or was it another nun?
You know, I couldn't remember if she said nun, orderly, or how she phrased it, but she said this woman was accidentally locked in with all these, you know, like, inmates, and there was, like, hundreds of maniacs that raped her, and that
she was raped over a couple hundred times.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
which
basically,
the result would be,
and skip to the end, we're at another funeral, which I won't spoil
he
that
sees
yet.
Her.
Caesar again goes and tries to follow. There's a tombstone.
Amanda Kruger.
Yeah. It's like, holy shit, that was his mom. Yep. Now, do you think that was like too much backstory? Because to me, that almost felt unnecessary in this.
Well, you know what's funny is, it's like I said before, in a lot of these movies, and other types of cartoons, whatever. I was like, sometimes I don't care about, like, a backstory. I'm like, I really don't want it. Like, I like characters being evil to just be evil. And Freddy was one of them. I was like, I just figured this is just some fucking nutcase. And he killed kids and did other insane stuff. And the parents burned them. And now it's this evil demon that's come back to just go for their children now. And, yes, it's an interesting backstory. And it led to them making, of course, more movies, and then they kept building upon, okay, then now this, here's his daughter in part six. So while it was an interesting twist to it, and it worked for that, I felt like then it just, we got too much as the movies went on. So in a way, it's like, I don't know how they would have, if they could have found a clever way of still writing it to give you more sequels without a backstory, it'd be great, because like you said, that's the unfortunate thing, is now we have to give you a reason of why anybody's crazy, and then once you do that, you almost want to pity the person. Like, you know, like friend out Freddy later, like, oh, well, they took his daughter away, and they did this, and oh, the poor guy, and then, but then you're thinking, okay, well, he was raped, like, oh, but he was abused everywhere he went, like, when you're hearing it in part six, like, all of his foster homes, like, I don't want to feel sorry for Freddy. I guess if, like, let's say Elm Street just ended on part three, it's kind of a twist that, oh, it would have been cool, but then end it. But then they just figured, oh, shit, we did that, so now what else can
we'll
we
just,
do?
We'll just have a dog piss on this, and he's back to life.
Yeah, it just, oh, yeah. Yeah, some things, it just, it went too much. And then the whole thing with the daughter in part six, like I said, just, so you're right, it's, it kind of worked, but then went too much. It just, I like just evil being evil sometimes. Let's just have an evil character and not pity the sucker.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my only issue with the movie, is just that, those segments just felt like they didn't almost, they, it was unnecessary. It didn't need to be there. To me, that felt more of like, cause Wes Craven, wrote the story, that it was just sort of his way of like shedding more light, but like in a way that just ultimately didn't work. And as you said before, that was sort of leading to all the other stuff that we got in the sequels. But
yeah, if it could have ended on three, like I said, it just could have, it worked for what it was, and it was great, because three is my favorite. Just within, like you said, all the stuff that they can do in their dreams, the different characters, the seeing Nancy, like you said, return, you know, and even her father later, because then within that backstory, you find out how the nun is saying, you go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that does lend itself to, all right, well, you have to find the bones and bury them and consecrate it and make it not evil anymore, which leads us to her reuniting with her father. And hey, you know, it's always nice to see John Saxon again. He's just always got that stern, pissed off look on his face. I feel like I've never seen that man smile ever. But now he's just a big time drunk who's still like, oh, Nancy, you're still talking about all this shit. But at least with Dr. Gordon, he's like, all right, that's it. Flips over the table.
Yeah, he kind of woke him up there. Yeah, exactly.
Like only Joe would do. Flip the table over, slams the gate. He's like, all right, this is what we're doing. And I do like the part when they do get there. He's always taking the keys out of the ignition so he can't go anywhere. But it's strange in a scrapyard because it doesn't seem like it was still in business. I'm like, why are all these cars still, like, they get rid of that shit. Those remains would have been gone a long time ago.
Well, that was the thing that I used to question was, okay, is it not in business or is it still, you know, in business?
It looked like it was, but maybe it was abandoned. Yeah.
Because, you know, that's the part I had to, like, throw out of my head was the thought of, okay, if it's still in business, you're telling me somebody never went in there and wanted to get a part off of that car or these cars? Because, you know, people are scrappers. They need, oh, I need a headlight. Oh, I need a bumper. But that's why I was like, I just ignored it. But, yeah, you find out that the bones are buried in the back trunk of one of those vehicles. And they have to get it. They have to dig a hole. And they have to, of course, then, you know, throw the holy water on it and bless it and whatever. And, yeah, which during this whole thing when Freddie, I think that's when he's holding Kincaid and then he sensed his bones were getting ready to get touched. And then he just disappeared. Yeah. It disappeared, and then boom, the skeleton kind of came up, and for then, it looked real cool. Like, looking back at it now, it's like, wow.
I always love that stuff. The stop motion and how they use that as well, like, with the actors and the technology that they had to do that. I always appreciate it. Kids today will probably watch it and be like, yeah, that's corny.
And they would. They'd laugh, because it's very noticeable, but still, it was cool, and he's having the fight with, you know, Freddy's skeleton, and of course, Freddy's skeleton then kills Nancy's father. But So then later when they're back into the dream and yeah. everything, and then Freddy's pulling everybody in the mirrors and Joey's hiding in the corner, and finally he just screams, no! And then boom, shatters all the mirrors, and they all come out and they think, oh my God, well, Joey found his superpower. He can talk now, and that's what killed Freddy. And then here comes like a spirit of Nancy's father. He's stopped being crossed.
I've crossed over. But that was also like a good like bait and switch, because you're like, you just saw him die and it made sense.
And it was perfect. See, for like Nancy wouldn't have known, we knew, but then he says, yeah, he crossed over, and they played that good peaceful music that put you at ease. You're like, oh wow, this is great. And then suddenly boom, Nancy made that face, and it's Freddy, and he's killing her. And then at the same time, that doctor, would you say it's Ian? What the fuck's his name?
Neil Gordon.
Okay, Neil. Is it terrible? I don't even remember his fucking name. But yeah, there you go. Thank you, Neil. Sorry about that. Yeah, so he, after he got bashed in the head with the shovel over there in the junkyard, he took the bones that were there and shoved them in that hole, and then he starts, you know, saying the ashes, dust to dust, and he starts throwing holy water, and then you see Freddy in the nightmare, boom, splashes of light and everything as he's getting killed, and then he laid that demon to rest by putting the cross on his forehead, and he killed him. So, bam, that was it. But, of course, Nancy, you know, she died. And that was sad because, you know, you were so excited to see her when she popped up. And I'm like, oh, damn it, she's dead. And they had the funeral for her. And, of course, you seen the thing with Amanda Krueger. And as much and as cool as it was how you always wanted Freddy or Jason or Michael to get killed, at the end of every movie, you always, as a fan, still wanted, are they going to give a hint that they're still going to do another one? You know, whether it's Jason opening an eye or something else.
Yep.
And then with that little paper mache house that's in Neil's house, you just seem to like go, bing. It came on. It's like, oh, there's going to be another. It's bizarre. You always wanted the villain to die, but you wanted more movies.
Well, because, I mean, they're a fun experience. I never got to see any of these in a theater, so I never had that. But if I had, then I definitely would have wanted that. I feel a sneeze coming on. Go ahead, Joe.
Go ahead. You go ahead and sneeze if you're going to sneeze. I thought you said you were going to sneeze.
Well, it kind of went away. I was just going to pass it over to you to talk, and I can just be – it went away.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah, but yeah, I remember that, like, in the same thing with the Friday the 13th movies. You always wanted the hint. You know, when you seen the jump scare at the end, or even, like, at the end of part 6, you know, when you figured, oh, he's drowned, he's done, and then that eye opens. Like, oh, yeah, another one. That part 7, goddamn, I love 7, but that'll be another day. I can't remember if we ever talked about just 7 by itself of Friday the 13th.
I mean, we could.
Yeah, someday. But this movie, yeah, it was perfection. This is one that if we were to rate with 5 stars, I do give this a 5. Like I said, it was great for its own standalone movie, which, like I said, it did start spawning the insanity afterwards. But for itself as its own movie, it's just, I love part 3. 1 and 3 are just, that's it. And, you know, and like I said, new nightmare and joy, but I love part 3. And, yeah, I give this sucker a 5 out of 5 stars.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5, and I feel like the sneeze is still just sort of lingering. I think, too, that this has the best poster of the entire series, at least to me, but it is kind of funny that the kids that are on the poster, none of that is reflective to anything that happens in the movie.
It seems like a lot of things happen with half of those movies with the posters.
Well, I mean, you know, you have to put it on the poster to, like, really sell it, but I'm surprised no one's gone back and just sort of redone it and had the different kids, like, have, like, the wizard power and, like, her with the two knives there. Instead, you know, you just get, like, a dude with, like, a mace. I'm going to have to look at the poster again, because it...
No, that would be... still remember...
Yeah, there's just, like, all right, so there's a dude with a mace. There's, like, a chick with, like, a white hair mullet thing with like a couple knives. You got a guy in a red shirt and a Superman pose with just like a bat hanging. It looks like it's in his hand. It's a small picture. And then you have like the main in the center wearing a dress. And I'm like, none of that's there. So maybe someone recreated it, and that would be kind of...
Hey, if anywhere to check, you could always check posters from possibly Japan and other countries, because I've noticed that they would take usually what happened in the movie and try to then draw it in their own poster. Or even some other times, they even go just far out in left field and draw stuff that makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like Halloween 2. I don't know if you've ever seen the Halloween 2 poster, I think, from Japan or China. You have, like, you see Michael Myers' mask, and under his neck it looks like a zombie. Like, maybe they thought he was a zombie and... and drew like the needle that was being put into the eye of that nurse in part two. They got, you know, put into the hot water. They show that, which it's a cool image of being drawn, but the whole zombie thing is like, is that what they see?
Oh, Michael Myers? I'm looking at it now.
Oh, you are? Yeah, it's a cool poster, but I was like, you know, that's a poster I'd actually like to own. If I could ever find a real actual poster of that somewhere, it actually looks kind of cool. It's bizarre, but still worth it.
Yeah, it's not too bad. And I know that, like, Italian movie posters would take liberties with plots and things as well. And it's like, none of that shit even happened. Why is it on the poster? Lots of tendencies to do that, but you have to. Because back then... Yeah. Back then, that was like between that and if you were actually in the theater and saw a trailer, that's all you got.
Mm-hmm.
Like TV spots back in the day for movies, though they existed, were very minimal and showed you absolutely nothing. That's like, oh, I want to go see that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was basically it was all word of mouth, the art, and being there to see an actual trailer. Which
I ain't getting art. Art really, it really did help sell a lot of those movies, even when there was bad ones. I told you how many movies I picked up when I'd go to rent something at the video store. The box art was beautiful, amazing, and the movie could suck, but that box art made you pick it up. I can't say that's really said for movies nowadays, because they just take pictures of the actor standing there.
Yeah, ooh, it's all just floating head photoshops.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, that's hard. It's Joe Amato work, where it looks like shit, but I guess it can work for a fucking box art. That's crazy.
That's what you should start doing. You should start just making your own movie posters and box arts for things. It's like, this is my idea for Nightmare on Elm Street, and it's just, I don't even know what you would do.
Hey, this is great, man. God, they got some shit. Yeah, so next week, I don't know what you'd want to do. I still would love to not do a comparison, but like I said, we've had Never Hike Alone. We did the commentary, or we talked about that, which was fantastic. But recently, that Friday the 13th was a Vengeance, that fan film just came out.
I haven't watched it, Joe. I'm hearing bad things, though.
Nathan, well, like I said, I think you should watch it, and then we could like do a little comparison of them both to kind of give fans our thoughts on two different type of fan films. Of, you know, Friday the 13th, but
one that's very good and one that's really shitty.
Well, you know, it's just to bring up stuff. Like I said, it's not really insulting Vengeance. It's just the thought of, okay, you have something like Never Hike Alone with, yes, there's that big, you know, appearance at the end of Tommy, which is very cool, but it focuses basically on two people the whole entire movie. You know, it's not full of tons of actors. It's not all tens and twenties of cameos. And it sometimes shows that, you know what, you don't need to have a giant cast. You don't need to have all these stars of, hey, part one or two or three or four and all these to make a great movie. Just write a good-ass movie, do good visuals, have good sound, make it believable, and it's quite a difference. Like I said, I'm not completely shitting on Vengeance. It's just I would love to hear other people's thoughts on it. It just – I feel like Never Hike Alone – didn't get as much exposure as it deserves. It should. And I think, I don't know if it's because Friday the 13th is not in the title of the movie, because I go to YouTube and I'm like, how the hell does this not have more hits? I mean, there should be millions of people that seen Never Hike Alone. It's that damn good.
What if, because I haven't watched Vengeance yet, what if...
Do a commentary of it?
What if we just do a commentary and we straight up, it's just like my first time watching.
Okay. How about that? We'll do that next week. We'll do commentary and your thoughts live for Vengeance.
Okay.
Next week. I like that. All right. Okay.
That'll work. I do want to make one recommendation. There's a film that I watched last night. If you guys have Amazon Prime, you got Prime Video. There's this movie that came out, well, it says 2016, but it didn't really get like a big release. It's called The Barn, and it has that aesthetic. It takes place in 1989. They do a pretty good job of making it look older. I won't go too much into the story.
Yeah, don't spoil it, because I'd like to see it. Yeah, don't spoil nothing for me. I'd like to see it, too. The Barn.
They probably could have trimmed about 10 minutes or so, but it was a fun ride. So if you guys have Prime Video, check out The Barn.
The Barn. Okay.
It was a cool film. I enjoyed it.
All right. Well, I think that's probably what you had in closing. So, after we're done, I'm going to be taking off here in just a bit. But, no, that was a good episode. I always loved Elm Street. Like I said, I still give it a 5 out of 5. Nathan gave it a 4 out of 5.
What you got planned, Joe? Going to the Hot Topics?
No, not Hot Topics, actually. Well, I got to go get medicine. So,
There we go. Medicine. There we go. We'll put that in quotations. Medicine.
Right.
We'll leave it ambiguous. But we hope you guys enjoyed. If you're new to the channel, please hit subscribe. Ring the bell so you get notified when new videos are posted. Or when I go live for Beyond Retro Arcade, which might actually happen today, Joe. I'm not entirely...
All right.
No, I've been saying this for like 3 months. It's like I'm egging him on.
It is, but if it happens, tag me.
Yeah. If it happens, Joe should have rang the bell so he's notified when it's happening.
And we hope
you guys do the same. If you enjoyed the episode, hit like, share it, leave a comment down below. Let us know your thoughts on this film.
Subscribe, too.
Well, that's what I said earlier.
Nope, you said like, share, and ring the bell. I don't think you said subscribe. You can go back and rewatch it. You missed one of them. I know you did.
I don't think I did, Joe. Anyway, subscribe, yes. Check out all the links down below. Hit Joe up for a custom figure. Buy one of his t-shirts and check out Fans of Power, the Master Universe podcast. Interactive, live podcast, Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Anything else, Joe? Joe's got to get his medicine.
That's it.
We'll let him hit the road. And until then, we'll see you in the future to talk about the past. Take care, everybody.